order. It's come. We started in chapter 1. We looked at trials. People started burning things down, looking at no one and naming no names. Our friendly neighborhood pyromaniac. You weren't the only one. Other people did it too. Trials, difficult things that we had to face. Then came temptations, and we went through some of those. Then in chapter 2, we've been looking at faith and works and trying to unite the two one way or another, letting our faith take us to places and letting our works match, and also the other way around, doing our works because of our faith, but not one instead of the other. You can't do only works. You can't do only faith. Because either way, you end up with a corpse. Dead works or dead faith. But when you bring the two together, they are alive. And they are productive and they are fruitful. So that's where we finished last time. For as the body without the spirit is dead, so faith without works is also dead. Deep breath, everybody. In through the nose, out through the mouth. Everybody. Come on. That's the big deep breath you need before you read James 3. Because James 3 is one of those passages where every single person on the face of the earth cringes at some point. If you do not cringe when you read James chapter 3, you are a perfect person. That's what it says. If you can tame your tongue, you are a perfect man, it says in the translation, but a perfect person. So let's get going. It had to come eventually. My brethren, let not many of you become teachers, knowing that we shall receive a stricter judgment. How many are cringing already? Some of you are probably cringing already. For we all stumble in many things. If anyone does not stumble in word, he is a perfect man, able also to bridle the whole body. Indeed, we put bits in horses' mouths that they may obey us, and we turn their whole body. Who is it? Look also at ships. Although they are so large and are driven by fierce winds, they are turned by a very small rudder, wherever the pilot desires. Even so, the tongue is a little member and boasts great things. See how great a forest a little fire kindles. And the tongue is a fire, a world of iniquity. The tongue is so set among our members that it defiles the whole body and sets on fire the course of nature and is set on fire by hell. For every kind of beast and bird, of reptile and creature of the sea, is tamed and has been tamed by mankind. But no man can tame the tongue. It is an unruly evil, full of deadly poison. With it we bless our God and Father, and with it we curse men, who have been made in the similitude of God. Out of the same mouth proceed blessing and cursing. My brethren, these things ought not to be so. Does a spring send forth fresh water and bitter from the same opening? Can a fig tree, my brethren, bear olives, or a grapevine bear figs? Thus no spring yields both salt
water, and fresh. I'm going to stop there before you all cringe into nothingness. It's a difficult, difficult, difficult thing, isn't it? We've looked already at the subject of a mature Christian and the characteristics of a mature Christian. In chapter 1, the characteristic of a mature Christian is that he's patient in troubles or trials or temptations. Patient. The second one is he practices the truth. Patient in trials, practices the truth. But now we come to the third one. And the third characteristic of the mature believer is that he has power over his tongue. Are you noticing the P's and the T's here? Clever, isn't it? Yeah, not mine. I wish I could claim credit for this, but this is Warren Wiersbe, that I told you we're following his outline for this study. He's patient in trouble, practices the truth, has power over the tongue. There is, there are lots of stories about this and similar things that you find people in churches who like to gossip. You ever seen anyone in a church who liked to gossip? And one lady came to her pastor one day. She was a famous gossip. She would sit at home all day on the telephone, just exchanging little pieces of information about everyone else. And you notice how Christians do this. We don't say, oh, I've got a juicy bit of gossip for you. They say, just something to pray about. You notice that? Yeah. Well, this particular lady, she one day came to her pastor and said, God has convicted me that my gossiping is a sin. And so in a very sort of spiritual way, she said, I'm going to lay my tongue on the altar. And the pastor replied, there isn't an altar big enough. And left her to think it over. Gossip is a terrible thing. But it's not only gossip, is it? It's anything that comes out of the mouth. The Christians that James was writing to had a couple of real problems in terms of what they were saying, in terms of their speaking. The first one, do you remember in James 1, verse 19, where James told them, be swift to hear and slow to speak? Do you remember that? They were Christians who were saying too much too quickly, not being guarded in their speech. Well, the believer who does that is at least unwise, at least. If not worse. We need to learn to speak and act, really, as if we were sort of standing in front of Jesus. In James 2:12, it says that. You speak as if you were already being judged. James 2:12. When you read other passages, like James chapter 4, verse 1, and James 4:11-12, you kind of get the impression that James's hearers, these group of Jewish Christians, probably had some very interesting church meetings. There's a lot of things going on in them, in other words. And when there's a lot of things going on, there's a lot to be talking about. And if there's a lot to be talking about, we have to watch the way we're talking about it. And so James addresses the subject of the way we talk about things with six illustrations. Six illustrations. He compares our tongue to six things. He says, first, it's like a bit in the mouth of a horse. And then he says, it's like the rudder on a ship. And then he says, it's like a fire. And then he says, it's like a poisonous animal. And then he says, it's like a fountain. And then he says, it's like a fig tree. Wow. Like a lot of things, isn't it? But you can put those six different ideas into sort of three groups, and that's how James does it, in fact. He says that firstly, in verses 1-4, that the tongue is like a bit and like a rudder, like the bit of a horse and the rudder on a ship. In other words, the tongue has the power to direct. It's what a rudder does. It gives direction to the ship. It's what a bit does in the mouth of a horse. You pull the reins this way and the horse goes this way. And so it gives direction. It has the power to direct. James 3 verse 2 says, we all stumble in many things or in many ways. But the ways that we stumble, the ways that we make mistakes, the way that we drop into error through our tongue are more than the ways that we stumble in any other direction. And this is the real crux of being the perfect man, of being mature, being perfect. Perfect doesn't mean without sin. Perfect means mature. We said that already. Do you remember in World War II, all of those posters that used to say things like, loose lips sink ships? You know, do you remember any of those? There were quite a lot of them, weren't there? Careless talk costs lives. All those propaganda posters. And in a sense, they were absolutely right, even in the spiritual world. Because the things that we say can harm or destroy or hurt. Death and life are in the power of the tongue. Solomon said it in Proverbs 8:21. David prayed, set a watch before my mouth. Keep the door of my lips. Incline not my heart to any evil thing. Psalm 141, verse 34. David knew, you see, that his heart was the beginning, was the source. That was the place where all of these thoughts and feelings and words came from. But the Bible says that out of the abundance of the heart, the mouth speaks. And that's the difficult thing, because when we hear something coming out of our mouths, it's not only the tongue that's doing it, it must be there in the heart first. Ouch, I can see you cringing. The words we speak affect those around us. A judge, for example, says guilty or not guilty. And those words, either one word guilty or two words not guilty, will affect the lives and the destiny of that prisoner or his family, his friends, so on and so on. It affects people, just one or two words. The president of the United States says a few words, and America goes to war, and that costs hundreds or thousands, occasionally millions of lives. A simple yes or no from a parent can affect the destiny of a child and their direction for years and years and years. On the 21st of April, I think some of you will remember this story from Graham. On 21st of April, 1855, a man called Edward Kimball went into a Boston shoe shop and he met Dwight L. Moody, D.L. Moody, who was an assistant in that shop. He spoke to him. Moody was converted, went on to become one of the greatest evangelists of all time. And those few words that Edward Kimball spoke to Dwight Moody turned into thousands of words that Dwight Moody preached from the pulpit, and thousands and